Hello, this is Becky McRae. We're talking today on the Positive View of Rural, and our guest is Mac Collier. Mac is probably best known as the creator and the host of Blog Chat, which is a very large, very fast-moving, and very lively conversation that's held on Twitter on the subject of blogging, and it is perhaps one of the most influential chat that has one of the longest histories as well. And it's all run by Mac Collier, a man from a very small town. Hello, Mac.
Hey, Becky. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, I'm excited that you took time to talk to me today. We actually had fun organizing the call because we played with the technology of going what technology was available in your rural area and how we were going to coordinate that with what I had, how we were going to make it work. So it was a very rural and small town kind of thing, just getting organized.
Yeah, and I'm in a very rural area, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners can sympathize, but internet access here where I live is not the best, and it's not up to speed with what you would see in like a major city. So yeah, sometimes you have to kind of bend around the technology and what's available in your particular space. But we managed.
Now, yeah, I mean, that's what we do. We manage. So one of the things is that you and I have actually met in person, which is a little unusual for a lot of us, that the folks that I get to interview here, is you and I have met in person a couple of times. And I've listened to you and the way you introduce yourself. And a lot of times you do it by the series of you'll name a town, and if they know where that one is, and then you'll name another town that's a little smaller, and then another town that's a little smaller. So run through your series of towns until we get down close to where you live.
Well, it depends. If I'm at a if I'm outside of the South, normally I will ask them if they know where Birmingham, Alabama is, and if they say yes, I'll move to Huntsville. Then if they know where Huntsville is, I'll say, have you ever heard of the Muscle Shoals area, Russellville? And they'll say yes or no, and if they do, I'll tell them, well, that's where I'm from. Now, if I'm in the South, I'll normally start out with Huntsville. So it just depends. But, yeah, I start out typically with the bigger city because I've learned from past experience. If I tell somebody that, oh, I'm from Russellville, Muscle Shoals, Florence area, they'll go, I have no idea where that is. So I just start out with a bigger area to kind of give them their bearings. Oh, yeah, I've heard of Birmingham, or, oh, yeah, I've heard of Huntsville, and we go from there.
And you don't actually live in town.
No, it's literally the country. I mean, it's out in between towns, so that's why I kind of like say the Muscle Shoals, Florence, Russellville area, because it's kind of like in between all three of them. So it's kind of give them an idea of where it is. But yeah, literally the country.
So do you have like a real street address? Or for a long time we didn't have addresses here where I live. We just all kind of used our box number and said Main Street.
Yeah, no, we actually converted from box. We had a rural route for years, and then we actually did get a street address. I'm trying to remember, probably maybe 10, 15 years ago. It's not that long. But, yeah, we're big time. We've got a street address and everything.
Yeah, we have street addresses now, and so instead of just being like Main Street, now we're like County Road 440 or something. So,
yeah.
You know, it, and then it's a big number, and people think we're somebody when our P.O. box number, -8, box 8. So tell me what you did before you became world famous as the creator and host of Blog Chat. I mean, you are very influential in social media, a lot of, and you laugh at that because you're a good Southern boy and you know better than to think that, you know, that note. Dollar and a half will buy you a cup of coffee is the kind of thing we say. But tell me about what you did before you ended up with this role that you have in social media.
Oh, I bounced around. I had several different jobs, and most of it was either jobs I was working while going and finishing college or finishing graduate school or right out of graduate school. But several years experience in production management and marketing, online marketing, in-store retail marketing, just kind of basically trying. Most of the jobs were basically either me trying to work to put myself through college and graduate school or right out of graduate school trying to figure out what do I want to do. And that was kind of how I fell into social media, because in 2005, I was like, like a year and a half out of graduate school, and still trying to land my big job. And I started, along the time that I was really immersed in this job hunt, I also kind of started learning a little bit about social media, and I started hearing more and more about blogging, et cetera. Well, really, it was just blogging at that point. And at some point, I realized that, you know what, this might be a way that I could use, or maybe a tool I could use to, if nothing else, I should probably learn what these tools like blogging, what is blogging all about, because maybe if nothing else, that would be a new skill set I could put on a resume, may make me more employable. So I got into blogging a little bit and started doing that, and kept doing that and got a little bit better with it in 2005, 2006, and found out that I had a knack for building an audience and building a community. And at some point, again, you have to remember, I'm in a very rural setting, so it's not like there are a ton of really primo job opportunities in this area. So at some point, it kind of got to where I realized that, you know what, maybe the actual social media stuff, maybe that could actually be my job, because I started getting invitations to write for other websites. I started getting speaking invitations, and at some point I realized that, you know what, this is actually turning into a source of income, so maybe it's worth me throwing my weight behind and just seeing what happens. So it kind of ballooned from there.
And so that is how you make your living?
It is, yeah.
And By being a smart guy with social.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it's basically, it's kind of like I almost like self-taught myself these skills, and then these skills led to me actually using those skills to get jobs and to get work. And it all started out with networking, and that's the great thing, and you know this about social media, is it's a wonderful way to network and to meet other people. And it was kind of like a perfect storm, because it gave me a way to these tools to not only show what I knew and what I knew about marketing, especially in business, and then in the course of creating the content goes out and it gives me more exposure to more people. So it just kind of blended in perfectly as a way for me to get my name out there and to get recognized and to get some work from it.
So it's come to the point now that you've written a book about some of the things that you've, kind of a culmination of a lot of things you've learned, but it's called Think Like a Rockstar. And it's, give people an idea of, you know, what's the 140 character version of what this book is about?
The 140 character, it's tough for me to say anything in 140 characters, especially when I'm talking about something I'm really excited about. But the main idea is that it looks at how is it that rock stars can so easily create and cultivate fans, and then it gives companies a template or a blueprint or an understanding of how to do the same thing. Because my, I don't want to say idealistic, but my hope maybe has always been, what would the world of business and the world of marketing look like if most companies had fans that literally loved them like rock stars do? How would the world of music, or excuse me, how would the world of marketing look different if most companies were in a place where a good portion of their customers, or at least a lot more than they have now, were really passionate fans? I think marketing would look completely different. It would be a much better experience for us as customers. It would be a much better experience for the brand as well. So that was kind of one of the big pushing points for me to want to write the book, because I wanted to create something that would help brands understand not only how do you create and cultivate fans, but why would you want to? Why would this impact your business? And it's kind of like, I don't want to say I'm trying to trick the brands, but honestly, the book is written from the point of view, and it's written to benefit the customer. It's not really for the brand. It's instructional for the brand, and it will show the brand how to be better at business, but ultimately, the book is written because I know that it would benefit the customer, because it would give them a better end experience. It would give them a better relationship with the brand. And that was really, I was really wanting to write it because I knew it would ultimately benefit the customer more than anyone else.
I love that. So now some of this is based on being from a small town. I mean, it seems to me that some of the principles come from your small town background.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because, honestly, I wrote the book for bigger brands because I think that bigger brands are the ones that needed the most help with this, and I think they are the ones that are, they not only have a bigger customer base, but they're also the most detached from their customer base. I think when you're in a small town setting, and it's one of those things, and you get this, but a lot of people, if you've always lived in a big urban environment, it's difficult to get this. But when you come from a small town setting, it's literally, especially where I am, and I'm sure you've seen the same thing, a lot of the time it's Mayberry. It's everyone knows everyone else. There's a sense of understanding. Everyone knows who everyone else is, and you view. You're literally part of a community, whereas if you're in an urban setting, you don't really get that. And that was part of it, because I think that in many ways, rock stars, what they do is they have a deeper understanding of who their fans are because they're connected to them and they interact with them more regularly. And I think you see a lot of the same things in small towns because we all interact with each other more regularly, and as a result, those interactions lead to a greater level of understanding and the greater likelihood that you'll have a real community presence. So, yeah, I think, and you've seen this as well, but with a small business especially, a lot of times, like you take the local gas station or the local whatever, I mean, they're a lot of times they can literally be the heart of a very small, maybe 50 to 100 person community. I mean, that can be not only the place where you go to get your groceries, but it can, on Friday afternoon or Saturday or whenever, it can become like the community hall. I mean, it can be like the place where everyone goes to meet, to discuss, et cetera. So, and I think a byproduct of that is that the owner, that's a big reason why they understand everyone in their community better, because they're constantly interacting with them, because they're constantly there. So, and I think that's something that big companies especially, they miss, because they just don't have that direct interaction with their customers. And as a result, their ability to understand really who their customers are, it's really a lot lower.
To my view, the technology that we have today has just forced big companies to act like they're part of that small town. They're in such a condition now of where every customer can talk to every other customer that
yeah.
Even the big companies now are being forced to have an understanding of their audience, like that small town gas station / grocery store / center of the community. And I think that that's a very new thing for big companies. They're having a hard time understanding what that's really like. Also, one of the things that I've seen you mention over and over around the book in particular is there's a graph you show where companies spend all their time on this big end of the graph where there's a whole bunch of potential customers that they might recruit someday,
mm-hmm.
when where they should be spending their time is over on the small end of the graph.
Yeah, the brand loyalty graph. And the idea is that what the companies do is most of them, their top marketing priority is focused on acquiring new customers. And new customers, that's a huge market. Whereas, and this was something that was really interesting to me that I learned from writing the book, is that rock stars, they're focused almost exclusively on their fans, which is a very tiny sliver of their customer base. But they focus on their fans and they almost completely exclude. They don't even really, it's almost like they don't even care about trying to acquire new customers. Whereas most companies have the exact opposite approach. They're really focused on acquiring new customers, and it's almost like their existing customers are an afterthought. And the reason why rock stars are so focused on their existing fans is because they understand that those fans are the people that go out and talk to other customers. They're the people that tell other customers, you need to listen to this song. You need to go buy groceries at this particular, the New Market gas station or whatever. I mean, they are the ones that are driving the marketing, and rock stars understand that and they accept that, whereas companies, they're still focused on acquiring new customers. And I get it, because a lot of times, for example, if you're hired at a big brand as a CMO, you know that your life expectancy at that new position may only be 12 to 18 months. So you've got to immediately get big gains, and the best way to do that in the minds of the corporation is to bring in new customers. You're focused on the getting the new customers, whereas you're not really noticing the churn rate. You're noticing that you're bringing in five new customers, but while you do that, you may lose three existing ones that are just sick of never getting any attention from you and never feeling like they have a special relationship with you or whatever, feeling like you're listening to them, so they move elsewhere. So back to your point about how brands are having to be in a position where the new technology is really forcing them to get to know their customers, I agree with that, but my fear is I think that what's going to happen first, and this is happening, is that the brands are only going to be focused on learning more about their customers as sort of like damage control. For example, we need to know more about our customers because we need to know what they're saying about us online. We need to know how can we protect our brand reputation. Whereas the more enlightened view, and I think they'll eventually get to this point, is what if you better understood who your customers are? Then if you better understand them, then you can better understand how you should market to them. And if you better understand how to market to them, guess what? That makes your marketing more effective and more efficient. It saves you money. So it really goes back to this idea that social media, for example, is a great way to make things happen indirectly. And I think that brands eventually will get to the point where they'll realize it's not so much about having a transactional relationship with your customers. It's more about having these emotional connections and relationships that lead to the transactions. And this is really what the rock stars are focused on. They're focused on having an emotional connection with their biggest fans, with the understanding that that is going to indirectly lead to sales. And I think when brands get to a position where they're more comfortable with having that emotional connection and creating a better experience and focusing more on creating value for their customers, with the understanding that if they do that, then they'll get the loyalty, which will drive the sales. And I think if we can ever reach that point, that I really want to see what the world of marketing and business will look like when we do, because it's going to be, if we can ever get the brands to understand that if you can create an experience, and if you can create value first for the customers, and then with the understanding and the trust that doing so, then you can monetize that, then it'll be a much better experience for the customer versus what we have now.
I love it. I love it. So you make no attempt to hide your accent, to pretend you're not really from a small town. Even when you're addressing the largest corporations in the world and telling them y'all are doing it wrong and here's some help. I think that's interesting, because a lot of times there's a tendency for the most urban of people to dismiss rural people, people with accents, based on the idea that we don't know as much, or obviously we would live in the big city and be urban ourselves.
Yeah.
Do you find that that's been an advantage, a disadvantage? How has that worked out for you?
Well, I mean, I just know that personally for me, I am more comfortable if I'm just straight up about who I am, what I'm doing, et cetera. I just don't, the whole idea of, I don't know what you want to call it, playing politics or whatever, that's just, I would just rather be upfront. I mean, even if you're talking about, for example, some of the most popular blog posts I've ever written are based around how much people are actually charging and how much I charge for marketing consulting services and how much others are charging for the same services, because I just don't, from my experience, when people aren't sure and they just when they don't know what the reality is, that causes them to guess. And a lot of times that causes them to guess incorrectly. They jump to the wrong conclusion. And before you know it, you've got someone that thinks that someone else is doing something that they are totally not. So, I mean, it's to me, I would rather just put all the cards on the table and let's just say this is the reality. If you think I'm charging too much, if you think I'm charging too little, well, at least you know. I mean, and to me, I would rather just say this is the way it is versus having everyone just trying to guess. Well, based on what I'm seeing, I think that this must be happening because, like I said, a lot of times when people have to guess, they guess incorrectly. And then you have people forming opinions based off of incorrect assumptions. So, I mean, I don't know. How do you hide an accent? I don't know. I don't care. I mean, what? I'm not going to hide that I come from Alabama. Why would I want to do that? Because somebody will find it out anyway. And it's not like I'm ashamed of coming from Alabama or a small area. I mean, so... My thinking has always been, why would you? And I think too, it helps establish trust because other people know that, hey, I'm gonna tell you where I am. I'm gonna tell you this is what I charge. I mean, some people do, some people don't. I mean, if it works for them or if it doesn't, that's fine. But I don't know. I just try to put as much information out there as I can because I just don't want people to question and to wonder, because like I said, a lot of times when you question and wonder, a lot of times people will jump to the wrong conclusion. So I just rather take that off the table if I can.
Just be who you are.
Exactly.
I love it. Sometime we'll get a three-way conference call with you and me and Jason Falls, and we'll all compare accents, and then we'll take over the world.
Yeah, Jason's got a pretty cool accent, too. I can note yours a little bit.
It comes and goes. I've lived too many places, and so it comes and goes. But I used to live down by Dallas, and so for the benefit of everybody, I have retained that Dallas accent somewhere in my brain. So, and then once I started, I can't stop. So,
yeah, it's funny. I noticed that, I noticed this more especially since I've started doing a lot more traveling the last several years and speaking at more events outside the South, because everyone immediately hones in on your accent. And before I'm like, well, I didn't even notice it. So now I can notice that when I'm here in Alabama and in the South, I'll notice that a lot of people seem to have a deeper or I don't want to say slower, but yeah, maybe a deeper accent than I do. So it's kind of like I'm comparing myself versus other people from the South in Alabama, whereas I'm sure to other areas of the country we all sound alike. So
yeah, there's a lot more subtlety and a lot more differentiation than people from outside of the area give us credit for, and I think that's true everywhere. I've spoken a few times in Ontario, which is a huge area, and just spoke in Northern Ontario, and there's like a dividing line between Northern Ontario and Southern Ontario. These are the little subtle local differences that other people don't notice because you're not from the area. So I think that's one of the great things about the fact that you hold on to part of where you come from, that you are local to someplace. Makes you different, makes you distinctive in a sea of other people that all may talk about the same subject, to at least have a point of differentiation that makes you somebody memorable.
Well, thank
Mac,
you.
I really appreciate you taking time to talk to me today and let me share it with everybody. Do you want to tell people where they can find your book and where they can find you and where they can find Blog Chat?
Yeah, you can find me at maccollier.com, maccollier.com. And my book is called Think Like a Rockstar, How to Create Social Media and Marketing Strategies that Turn Customers into Fans. You can find that on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, most online retailers. And Blog Chat is every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central, and we're coming up on, I think we're about 2 weeks away from the fifth year anniversary of running it. It was one of the very first chats. I think there were probably two or three before Blog Chat, but it's definitely one of the longest running ones. So, and we talk about, like you said in the opening, we talk about different blogging topics every week, and the idea is just to help you become a better blogger and help you connect with other people that are blogging and maybe get some insights and some help from them and maybe make a few new friends.
Okay, I know I said we were wrapping up, but tell people about the no experts rule of blog chat.
The no experts rule, I have a no experts allowed rule, and what that basically means is that my view is that anyone can learn something from anyone else, and I think that because for your listeners that aren't really familiar with the idea of Twitter chats, you basically have a group of people that are chatting on Twitter. So in the case of blog chat, you can have maybe 300 or 400 people going at one time. And I've noticed a couple of things over the years. The first is that if you have someone there that's kind of either I'm identifying as the expert or that other people view to be the expert, I think that what happens is if everyone sees that there's someone that's been identified by the group as being the expert, I think everyone else naturally assumes that they aren't the expert. And I think that's wrong, because the second thing I've noticed is that I think most people are smarter than they really give themselves credit for. And I think that everyone can learn something from everyone else. So I'm trying, when I say no experts allowed, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to create an environment where everyone feels comfortable participating. And that's why, for example, with blog chat, a lot of the topics are more 101 level, and that's by design. And I'll have some of the more advanced bloggers, the ones that have been coming for years, they'll sometimes say, I really wish we'd do more advanced topics. But the problem with doing more advanced topics is that it hinders participation, because a lot of people, even if they are knowledgeable about a particular more advanced topic, a lot of times they don't feel comfortable participating because they assume that, oh, I don't have anything to offer on this particular topic, when a lot of times they do. So that's kind of why I have the no experts allowed rule, basically just to let everyone know that, hey, we're all here to learn from each other. So if you have something to say that you think can make the conversation better, please feel free to contribute.
See, I think that's a beautiful small-town rule right there, that everyone has a voice to bring to this. There's plenty of room for everyone to join the community and join the discussion and to contribute. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, one of the things that really upsets me is, especially in the social media space, is because we keep hearing more and more talk about how people will say, oh, there's so many blogs, and if you don't have something important to say, then you shouldn't write a blog post, or if you can't bring a new topic to the table, and all you're going to do is repeat what everyone else has said, then you shouldn't be. I mean, I just don't like this idea of trying to tell other people that they don't have an idea worth sharing. I mean, there's who am I, or who are you to say that If you can't write a masterpiece, then don't blog. I mean, I think we're all richer when we all have more voices to learn from. And even if someone writes something and maybe I've already read that topic 10 other times, it doesn't matter. To somebody else, that may have a really big impact on them. So I tend to, if all things being equal, I would rather see more people sharing their voice versus, no, let's be quiet and let's let the expert talk. So
I like it. I like it a lot. Mac, thank you very much once again. This time we really will wrap up. This is it. I'm serious. We've got to stop. Thank you very much for talking to me today, Mac. That's it.
We've
got to leave. It's closing time.
All right.
Thanks, Mac.
Thank you, Becky.